What if I told you that the top 1% of tech operators aren't actually writing their own strategy memos anymore?
Right, or even organizing their own sprints for that matter.
Exactly. I mean, they've completely stopped doing the foundational, daily work that got them promoted in the first place.
It sounds incredibly counterintuitive, doesn't it? Like almost like a guaranteed recipe for getting fired.
Totally. But when you look at the telemetry of how these high-performing teams are actually operating today, the data bears that out completely.
Yeah, the very actions we used to define as, quote unquote, doing the work have just fundamentally shifted.
And that exact shift is what we are dissecting today. Because if you were listening to this deep dive, you were likely a builder, right? A product manager, an engineering lead, maybe a founder.
You already get the basics. You know what a large language model
Right,
is.
you know what a neural network is. We are completely skipping the 101 level context today.
Yeah.
Our mission is to surface what is actually moving the needle right now in your daily operations.
And we have some incredible source material for this.
We do. We're pulling from a really fascinating excerpt in the May 16th, 2026 edition of the Mindstream newsletter.
Which is such a great read.
It really is. And this piece outlines the 10 daily behavioral patterns of highly productive people using AI.
And the core thesis here, which I love, isn't about, a new model launch or some API update.
No, not at all. It is entirely about a behavioral rewiring.
That is the crucial distinction to make right up front, because for a long time, the industry treated AI as this novelty.
Like a highly advanced party trick almost.
Exactly. You'd ask it to write a poem or, generate a funny image of a cat in space.
Right.
Then it evolved into an intermittent tool, something you'd reach for only when you were feeling particularly stuck.
Like reaching for a calculator?
Spot on. But the top operators we are observing today have completely moved past that phase. AI is no longer a tool they pick up and put down.
It's transitioned into a foundational workflow layer.
Yes, it is the invisible operating system running constantly in the background of their day.
So let's break down the mechanics of this operating system, right? Let's start right at the beginning of any project.
Breaking the friction.
Breaking the friction, exactly. Because whether you are architecting a new database schema or writing a PRD, the absolute biggest bottleneck is that initial friction.
Oh, the paralysis of the blank page, it's universally terrible.
It really is. And the data from Mindstream points to a very aggressive pivot here. Top performers absolutely refuse to start from scratch anymore.
Never. They do not wait for the right moment or for inspiration to magically strike.
Right, they just use AI to generate the zero draft. And habit one is literally just that, they just start with AI.
The psychology behind this is so fascinating to me because a blank page represents infinite possibilities, right?
Which sounds good, but is actually terrifying.
It is deeply paralyzing. Cognitive science tells us we suffer from choice overload before we have even typed a single line of code.
So true. When you're staring at that blinking cursor, your brain is just burning immense amounts of glucose trying to decide the parameters of the task.
Right. But by having an AI generate that first, terrible, messy, completely unrefined draft, you bypass that entire neurological block.
You completely bypass it.
Yeah.
I like to think of it as an ignition switch.
Oh, that's a good analogy.
Yeah, or like a starter motor in a car. It's no longer about the engine doing all the driving. It's just about eliminating the inertia of a cold start.
Because it changes the task from creation to reaction.
Yes. And human beings are inherently much better at reacting to something, even if it's just pointing out why it's completely wrong.
We love pointing out why things are wrong. It's much easier than creating something from the void.
Think about drafting a postmortem for a server outage. Staring at a blank Google Doc is agonizing.
Absolutely agonizing.
But if I feed my rough bullet points into an LLM and just tell it to format a standard postmortem, I instantly have a document.
It might be wildly inaccurate regarding the actual root cause.
Right, but fixing those inaccuracies feels like editing, not writing. The friction is gone.
You are outsourcing the inertia. And in high-velocity tech environments, perfectionism at the starting line is fatal.
It really is a form of professional self-sabotage to wait for the optimal moment to begin.
The velocity of your output is dictated entirely by how quickly you can move from zero to one.
And this philosophy extends beyond just starting documents, doesn't it? It applies to problem solving in real time.
Yeah, that brings us to habit eight from the newsletter. These operators refuse to sit on problems. They get unstuck incredibly fast.
The prompt the source mentions they use for this is so simple, but so effective. It's essentially, I'm stuck on this specific problem. Help me figure out what to do next.
Think about what that replaces for a second. Historically, when a senior engineer hits a wall, what's the default behavior?
They go down a massive documentation rabbit hole.
Right. They get frustrated, they context switch, they check their email, maybe they ping a colleague on Slack.
But that colleague is in a flow state and doesn't respond for 3 hours.
Exactly. So the momentum completely dies, the project just stalls out.
But when you introduce this dynamic triage system, prompting an AI with the specific parameters of your roadblock, it fundamentally changes the velocity of the entire team.
It's like taking the old software engineering concept of rubber duck debugging and putting it on steroids.
Yes, rubber duck debugging, where you explain your code line by line to a literal inanimate rubber duck on your desk.
Until you eventually realize your own logical error, it works because it forces you to externalize your internal cognitive process.
It forces syntax onto your abstract frustration.
Exactly. But the limitation of the rubber duck is that, well, it doesn't talk back.
Right, the duck doesn't say, "Hey, have you considered that your authentication token might be expiring prematurely?"
But an LLM does. It has ingested the entire internet's worth of Stack Overflow and GitHub repositories.
So it can suggest five potential paths forward instantly.
And the brilliant part is, it doesn't even need to give you the exact correct answer to be useful.
Wait, really? Explain that.
It just needs to provide enough variance in its suggestions to make your brain say, no, option A is terrible, option B is impossible given our architecture, but wait, option C makes me realize the actual solution is over here.
Oh, wow. So it just keeps the wheels of momentum turning?
Precisely. You don't lose the flow state.
So once you've broken that initial friction and you have that momentum, you run into a new problem, which is keeping that momentum alive.
Because if you're constantly stopping and starting, you lose all the advantage you just gained.
And this is where the behavioral data shows that top operators lock into a specific context window and they batch their work entirely. That's habit two.
Right, they don't just ask for one output, they ask for the entire ecosystem of that output.
This concept of batching is deeply rooted in managing cognitive load, isn't it?
Oh, completely. Context switching is the silent killer of productivity in the tech sector.
It really is. Every single time you shift your focus, say, from writing a technical spec to reviewing a pull request to answering a vendor email.
You pay a massive switching penalty. Your brain has to unload the previous context from its working memory and load the new one.
It's exhausting. But by batching tasks with AI, you capitalize on that state of flow.
Let's ground this in a real scenario to make it practical. Say you're a product marketing manager launching a new feature.
Okay, classic tech scenario.
You finally got the core messaging document exactly right. The traditional workflow is that you finish the doc, take a break, and then tomorrow you start writing the external blog post.
Right, and then the next day you draft the internal sales enablement email.
Exactly. You were spinning up that mental engine from a cold start three separate times.
Whereas the optimized workflow leverages the fact that the AI already has the entire context loaded in its context window right then and there.
Yes. And you have the context loaded in your biological working memory. The friction is at absolute zero.
So you strike while the iron is hot.
Right. You tell the AI, great, this messaging is perfect. Now, in this exact same session, generate the internal Slack announcement for the engineering team focusing on the technical milestones.
And then generate the external email to our beta testers, focusing on the UX improvements.
And a thread of three posts for social media. You process the entire life cycle of that information in one sitting.
You are maximizing the return on investment of your initial cognitive effort. You did the hard work of defining the core truth of the feature.
The AI is simply translating that truth across different distribution channels.
Okay, so navigating that kind of workflow brings us to the next major hurdle for an operator. Segment two, redefining prep.
Because you aren't just creating output all day.
Exactly.
Huh?
You are constantly forced to ingest new information.
Yeah.
The volume of data a tech leader has to synthesize daily is frankly suffocating.
It's unmanageable for a single human brain.
And this is where the mindstream piece gets into territory that I think is
Yeah.
going to make some traditionalists deeply uncomfortable.
Oh, I know exactly what you're going to bring up.
Habit three. We are moving from the starting line to the preparation phase. And the core advice here is skip the instruction manual.
Just skip it entirely.
Instead of spending hours reading the documentation, the habit is to ask AI to explain it to you simply.
It is a radical departure from the pedagogical models we were all raised on.
It really is.
The old paradigm, especially in engineering and deep tech, was just-in-case learning.
Right. You read the entire manual, you study the entire API documentation, just in case you eventually need to know how a specific edge case feature works.
Okay, I have to push back here. I'm looking at this skip the manual advice, and I am cringing a bit, honestly.
I get it. Sounds dangerous.
Let's talk about the very real danger here. If you're a junior engineer or a newly minted product manager, and you just rely on an LLM synthesized simple summary of a complex system,
you're worrying they won't understand the foundation.
Exactly. Aren't you building a house on sand? You don't actually know how the underlying architecture works. You just know the surface level summary the AI fed you.
Doesn't this guarantee intellectual laziness and a total lack of foundational knowledge long term?
That is the most common and arguably the most vital critique of this workflow. If the AI is used merely as a crutch to avoid difficult reading, then yes, it produces fragile operators.
Fragile operators. I like that term.
But we have to reframe what we mean by foundational knowledge in the modern tech stack. We operate in a world of abstraction layers.
Okay, walk me through that.
Think about when you write a script in Python. You aren't reading the manual on how the compiler translates that into machine code, right?
No, of course not.
And you aren't studying how the CPU manages the electrical voltages. You trust the abstraction layer of Python so you can operate at a higher level of utility.
Ah, I see where you're going. So you're saying the AI synthesis is just the newest abstraction layer.
Precisely. The competitive edge in today's tech landscape isn't having read the AWS documentation cover to cover.
Nobody has time for that anyway.
Exactly. The edge is application and speed to utility. If you need to integrate a new payment gateway, reading the entire documentation might take 3 days of intensive study.
But prompting an AI with your specific tech stack and saying, explain the specific authentication flow I need for this integration and provide a boilerplate example.
That gets you testing that integration within 30 minutes.
It accelerates the feedback loop massively. So you aren't avoiding learning. You're learning by doing rather than learning by reading.
Yes, exactly. You learn the nuances of the system when the boilerplate code fails or when the edge case arises in real time.
You're moving from a theoretical understanding to a practical operational understanding exponentially faster.
And this shift from passive consumption to active direction connects directly to how we conduct research now, which is habit 5.
Right, turning AI into a research assistant. The newsletter points specifically to tools like Perplexity AI for this.
Which is huge. We are actively witnessing the death of the traditional search engine query for high-level operations.
Think about the mechanics of a traditional Google search. You type in a query, and you're presented with a list of links.
And then the manual labor begins.
You have to manually open those links in 10 different tabs, skim the articles, evaluate the credibility of each source, extract the relevant data points.
And then synthesize those points in your own mind. I call it digital foraging.
Digital foraging. I really like that.
Yeah.
You're wandering through the forest, flipping over rocks, hoping to find the specific berries you need for your recipe.
Exactly. And the cognitive load of evaluating all that irrelevant information is massive.
It really is.
But tools utilizing R-Grad retrieval augmented generation like Perplexity, they shift you from a digital forager to a digital commander.
You don't ask for links. You ask a complex, multivariable question.
Right. The AI acts as your research assistant. It goes out, reads the top 20 articles, pulls the exact market sizing statistics you asked for.
It synthesizes the conflicting viewpoints.
And then it hands you an executive brief with the actual footnotes and source links attached.
I want to focus on the footnotes part because that solves the hallucination problem that makes a lot of operators wary.
That is the critical feature.
Because if I'm building a slide deck for a Series B pitch, I cannot walk into that room with a market sizing stat that an LLM just hallucinated out of nowhere.
You'd be laughed out of the room.
Exactly. But if the tool provides the actual citation to a verified Gartner report or a recent SEC filing, my risk profile drops to zero.
Having that verified data at your fingertips in seconds completely changes how aggressively you can build a strategy.
It changes the very nature of preparation. And that preparation isn't limited to just data collection.
No, not at all. The most fascinating application of this prep phase is habit 6, prep for conversations.
This one is wild to me, but it makes perfect sense. Preparing for human interaction.
The data shows they are using AI to prep for highly volatile conversations.
So before a massive sales call, a tough performance review, or an intense leadership sync, they're prompting the AI with, what should I ask? What should I be ready for?
Human interaction, especially in high-stakes corporate environments, is incredibly unpredictable.
It really is.
And your emotional state often clouds your strategic preparation.
Give me an example of that.
Well, say you have to go into a meeting to tell the CEO that a critical product launch is going to be delayed by a month.
Oof. Your cortisol levels are spiking immediately.
Right. Your fight or flight response is fully engaged. You are likely just trying to survive the conversation rather than navigate it strategically.
I've been in those rooms.
Yeah.
Your brain just freezes up. You hope they just don't ask the one question you really don't want to answer.
Exactly. But you can externalize that anxiety into a simulation now.
Oh, that's brilliant.
You feed the context into the AI. You say, "I am the engineering lead. We have to delay the Q3 launch by 4 weeks because we discovered a critical vulnerability in the database architecture during pen testing."
I have to inform the CEO and the VP of sales.
Yes, and you prompt it. Play the role of the VP of sales whose commission heavily depends on this launch.
Oh, that is so specific.
What are the three most aggressive, difficult questions you are going to ask me, and how should I frame my response to demonstrate total ownership of the solution?
It's a sparring partner. You're stepping into a digital ring and taking the punches in a simulation before you ever walk into the actual boardroom.
And the LLM, having ingested decades of business case studies, communication theory, and corporate conflict resolution strategies.
It's going to hit you with questions you likely haven't even considered.
It will point out the glaring flaws in your defensive posture.
So when you finally walk into that meeting, the anxiety is neutralized.
The competitive edge isn't just that you know the technical facts of the delay, it's that you're walking in completely fortified.
You've already experienced the worst-case scenario. It allows you to regulate your heart rate, maintain eye contact, and actually lead the conversation instead of just reacting to the anger in the room.
That preservation of your emotional and mental bandwidth is the defining characteristic of a highly productive operator today.
They aggressively protect their cognitive reserves.
Which transitions perfectly into how they manage the macro structure of their entire day.
Right. Let's look at segment three, strategic delegation. We've broken the friction of starting. We've redefined how we ingest information and prep for volatility.
Now, how do these operators actually structure their hours to maximize the ROI of their output?
The newsletter suggests habit four, use AI to plan the day. Never wing it.
Never.
They drop in every task and let the AI organize it by priority, time blocks, and subtasks.
This is a direct assault on decision fatigue. We have a limited reservoir of executive function every single day.
If you open your laptop at 8 a.m. and look at a raw, unprioritized to-do list of 30 items spanning Jira tickets, emails, code reviews, and strategy planning.
Your brain has to expend massive amounts of energy just deciding what sequence to tackle them in.
Should I answer these 10 Slack messages first? Or should I review that pull request? Or, do I need to look at the budget?
Just having that internal debate depletes the exact energy you need to actually do the work.
Precisely. By the time you decide what to do, your capacity to do it well is already diminished. It feels like we are treating human thought like a high-level programming language now.
Oh, how do you mean?
Well, think about it. When you write code in a modern language, you write the high-level logic, right? The strategic architecture.
Right.
You don't write the tedious machine code. The compiler handles that translation.
Ah, I love this.
In this workflow, the human operator is writing the high-level logic, the raw tasks, the ultimate goals, and the AI acts as the compiler, translating that messy human thought into an executable schedule.
That compiler analogy is absolutely brilliant because
Yeah.
the compiler doesn't invent the software, it just makes it executable by the machine.
Yes.
The AI doesn't invent your tasks, it makes them executable by your biological system. You dump the raw ingredients of your day into the prompt.
Here are my five meetings. Here are the three documents I need to write. I have 45 minutes of free time at 11 a.m. and 2 hours at 3 p.m. Organize this for maximum deep work.
And it tells you, do the high cognition strategy work at 11 a.m. Batch, process all your Slack replies and low-stakes emails during the 3 p.m. slump.
You don't have to think about the logistics. You just follow the compiled code.
And that compiler concept applies directly to how we distribute information too, which brings us to habit seven.
The newsletter stresses that top performers create once and repurpose everything. They never manually remix content.
The physics of communication inside a scaling tech company are just brutal.
So brutal.
To achieve actual alignment across a 100-person team, a single core message must exist in multiple formats.
It's the bane of every product manager's existence. You write a masterful, comprehensive 6-page PRD. You pour your absolute soul into it.
And, you know, for a fact that maybe 3 engineers will actually read it deeply.
Exactly. Because the sales team doesn't need the database architecture details. They need the value proposition.
And the executive board doesn't need the user flow wireframes. They need the projected ROI and timeline.
Historically, the person who generated the core idea was also burdened with the manual labor of translating that idea into all those different dialects.
Which feels like punishment, honestly.
It really does. Once you have birthed the massive strategic idea, being forced to rewrite it as an engaging 200-word Slack update, and then again as a bulleted email for the CEO, is agonizing.
It's extremely low-leverage work.
I always compare it to running a high-end kitchen.
Oh, go on.
Well, the AI is the sous chef, right? It handles all the tedious prep work, like sorting the day's tasks by priority, and it figures out how to plate the leftovers, which is repurposing the content.
Leaving the head chef to just focus on the menu.
Exactly. By offloading that translation layer to the AI sous chef or compiler, you're scaling your output without scaling your hours.
You take the 6-page PRD, feed it into the AI, and prompt. Extract the core value propositions and write a persuasive email to the sales team.
Then extract the technical milestones and draft a bulleted update for the engineering Slack channel.
You are fully delegating the logistics of formatting.
So you preserve your mental bandwidth for the actual decision making.
Which brings us to the final hurdle.
Segment 4, the execution gap and the 80-20 rule. Because all this planning, all this prep, all this batching is entirely useless if you cannot cross the finish line.
You eventually have to deliver a tangible product.
And this is exactly where we separate the operators who use AI to generate the illusion of productivity from the operators who use AI to actually ship product.
The advice here is pretty brutal. Habit 9, don't overthink execution.
You do not need to be a designer. You do not need to be a front-end developer.
Right. Highly productive people use tools like Claude to mock up ideas, decks, and landing pages.
The Mindstream source specifically highlights HubSpot's AI productivity stack alongside Claude as part of this execution ecosystem.
Let's dissect why those specific tools are highlighted. We are talking about the complete democratization of execution.
Look back just 5 or 6 years ago. If you were an operations manager with a brilliant idea for an internal tool to streamline onboarding,
but you didn't know how to wireframe a UI or code a basic prototype,
your idea just died in a Google Doc.
The friction of translating the abstract idea into a visual structural format was simply too high.
You'd have to submit a Jira ticket to the design team, beg for resources, and wait a month just to get a mock-up to prove your concept.
The dependency chain was incredibly long.
But now you can take your rough notes, feed them into Claude, and say, generate a functional HTML, CSS, and JavaScript prototype of a dashboard with these 3 data inputs.
Or you leverage HubSpot's AI tools to instantly generate the complex CRM workflows, the lead scoring logic, and the automated email sequences to support a new go-to-market strategy.
You collapse the time between ideation and tangible prototype to nearly 0. You are building in minutes what used to require cross-functional alignment and weeks of sprints.
But, and this is a big but, this introduces the most critical tension in the entire modern workflow, and it leads us directly to the final and most vital behavioral habit.
Habit 10. Know where AI stops and where you step in.
The 80-20 rule.
Right. The rule is that AI gets you approximately 80% of the way there, instantly. Then the human takes over to add personality, context, and make it actually good.
But I feel a major pushback coming here.
You know me too well. Here is my pushback, and I know every builder listening to this is feeling this exact anxiety right now.
Let's hear it.
If every single competitor in my space, if every other product manager vying for promotion is using Claude to instantly mock up their decks.
Right.
And using Perplexity to instantly pull their market research.
Yeah.
And using AI to structure their code.
All doing it.
And they are all instantly arriving at that exact same 80% baseline. Doesn't average just get terrifyingly high?
Yes. The baseline has absolutely permanently moved up.
So if everyone's baseline is artificially elevated to a solid B+, how do you actually stand out? Doesn't the entire tech ecosystem just become a sea of high quality, perfectly formatted, grammatically correct sameness?
A void of generic competence.
Exactly. A void of generic competence.
This is the most profound question facing knowledge workers today. You are entirely correct that AI is rapidly commoditizing that first 80%.
What used to take 3 days of grueling manual labor to achieve a perfectly average result now takes 4 seconds.
Therefore, the ability to produce average work is no longer a marketable skill. It has zero economic value.
Wow. Zero economic value. So what is left for the human operator?
The final 20%. And that final 20% is where all the economic and strategic value now resides.
Because AI can give you impeccable structure, perfect syntax, and comprehensive synthesis.
But an LLM fundamentally lacks lived experience. It does not possess taste.
Taste. That's an interesting word for tech operations.
I think it is the only word that matters now.
Elaborate on that. How does taste apply to tech?
An AI does not understand the bizarre, unspoken, internal politics of your specific engineering department.
Oh, that's very true.
It doesn't know that the VP of sales secretly hates bulleted lists and prefers narrative memos.
It doesn't understand the highly nuanced, slightly cynical inside joke that your specific developer community loves.
Exactly. It cannot replicate the unique, hard-earned cadence of your brand's voice. Human judgment, taste, and unique localized context monopolize that final 20%.
It is the difference between competent and compelling.
Yes. The AI makes the landing page functional. You have to make it resonate with the anxiety of your target user.
So the people who will lose their jobs, or at least lose their competitive edge in this new era, are the ones who mistakenly believe the AI gets them to 100%.
They hit generate on the email, copy it, paste it, and hit send. They are the ones flooding the zone with that sea of sameness you described.
They are acting as routers, just passing data through.
Exactly. But the highly productive operators, the ones we are studying today from the Mindstream piece, look at that AI-generated 80% and feel immense relief.
They say, great, the heavy lifting of the syntax and structure is done. Now I can spend 100% of my time and energy obsessing over the micro details that actually make this product sing.
You shift your energy entirely from creation to curation.
Going back to the kitchen analogy, you are no longer exhausting yourself chopping the onions and boiling the stock.
Right. You are tasting the final reduction and deciding it needs exactly one more drop of acidity to balance the dish.
You are injecting the human context that an algorithm simply cannot generate.
Okay, we have covered a massive amount of ground here.
We really have. And I want to bring this all down to brass tacks for the week ahead for you, the listener. We promised a practical frame for the thoughtful operator, and here it is.
Given these patterns from the Mindstream research, your job this week is to run a ruthless audit on your own daily workflows.
You need to locate the friction points where you are still operating on the old paradigms.
Look at your calendar for tomorrow. Where are you stuck at the 0% phase?
Are you still staring at blank pages, waiting for the perfect moment to begin a difficult strategy document?
If so, you need to use the AI ignition switch. Just force out the zero draft and get to 10% instantly.
Or are you burning cognitive energy trying to prioritize your Jira backlog manually every morning?
Hand it to the compiler. Let the AI map your day.
Conversely, look for the areas where you have swung too far the other way. Are you letting the AI try to do 100% of the work?
Are your internal memos and external communications starting to sound like a perfectly polite, incredibly boring robot wrote them?
If your emails sound like they were written by someone who has never felt joy or pain, you have a serious problem.
You need to reclaim that final 20%.
You need to aggressively inject your unique context, your humor, your institutional knowledge back into the work.
The goal of all these habits isn't just to work harder or produce more noise. It is to work with higher velocity, lower friction, and higher impact.
It forces a total reevaluation of what our value actually is to an organization.
And that is exactly the thought I want to leave you with as we wrap up this deep dive.
Think about this as you open your laptop tomorrow morning. We have established that AI is effectively taking over the organizing, the drafting, the deep research, and the tedious repurposing of information.
It is getting us to that 80% mark at the push of a button.
So what is the true evolving definition of your specific context?
If the heavy lifting is commoditized, what exactly are you bringing to the table?
Right. If our primary job in the near future is going to be injecting personality, institutional alignment, and taste into the final 20% of an AI's output, how do you start training for that today?
How do you systematically practice having better taste?
Because suddenly we aren't pulling the ripcord on the engine anymore. We aren't struggling to get the machine started.
The engine is running. The vehicle is fully primed.
The only real question left for you as an operator is, where are you going to steer it?